Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, depending on your time zone that you're joining us from. And welcome to today's webinar, SQFI Traceability and Risk Management, Is Your Organization Prepared? My name's Amy. I'm a member of the marketing team here at the Perry Johnson Companies, and I'll be helping to facilitate today's webinar and offer technical support to our speaker. Today, we're welcoming a special guest, a return guest, actually, who we've had on a couple of times. That's Tammy Van Buren of SQFI. Tammy will be introducing herself to you all shortly. We also have on the call with us Chris Reno of the project management team at PJFSI. So he'll be available to answer any certification specific or PJFSI specific questions that you might have regarding our programs. And then one more thing before we get started, I mentioned asking questions. We absolutely, as I said, encourage any questions you might be able to think of while you're in the broadcast. To ask a question, you can just go right into the control panel on your screen. You're going to click on the questions tab. Should open up and show you something like this, where you can type a question in and click send. We'll get that on our end and we'll pass that along to be answered during the broadcast. And now I'm going to go ahead and hand things over to Tammy. Tammy, thank you so much for joining us today. You can take it away whenever you're ready.
All right. Thank you, Amy. So I am so glad to be here with you all today. And as Amy has mentioned, we will be taking questions. So please type those questions in, submit them. We will get to those at the end. Again, it can be about the presentation today or just SQFI in general. I would be glad to take any questions that you might have. So today's webinar, we're going to talk about traceability and risk management. Is your organization prepared? Now, you know, traceability is a requirement of the SQF code, has been for many years. So some of you may be here new to SQF, so this will absolutely be applicable to you. But some of you may currently be SQF and you may want to hear some new insights. So we'll try to give you some new information that you can take back and build on what you already have in place. And then, of course, one of the reasons we wanted to talk about traceability is, you know, the FDA coming out with a traceability rule at the end of the year. That's been in the works for a couple of years now. Public comments, from what I've heard, there were many. So we're not sure exactly what the final traceability rule will look like when it's released in November. But just to kind of get you thinking about traceability and making sure that you're ready. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce myself a little bit. So for those of you that don't know me, there's my smiling face there. Tammy Van Buren, I have quite a few years of experience in quality control. I've been in the food industry, you know, it says 7 years now. I've been with SQFI now going on 3 years. So I'm probably closer to about 10 years in the food industry. But I came from manufacturing. So I spent many years in the automotive industry and then moved into the food industry, like I said, about 10 years ago. And I was an SQF practitioner and I worked for a couple of different, names in the food industry. You may be familiar with Treehouse Foods, D&W Fine Pack, and, enjoyed my time in manufacturing. But I'm very happy now to be working for SQFI as their compliance manager. And I get to look at a lot of data, a lot of statistics. I look at a lot of nonconformances. I read a lot of audit reports. I probably read 400 audit reports last week or last month. So I look at a lot of audit reports and I'm analyzing those, determining if the sites are doing what they should be doing. I'm looking to see if the auditors are auditing the way they should be looking at those requirements. If you're ever around me for very long, there will be a couple of sayings that you will hear me say quite often. Number one is read the code. So, you know, when I train new auditors, that's one of the things that I highly encourage them to do, as well as SQF practitioners, read the code and break it down. And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to look at that product trace requirement and we're going to break it down and see exactly what it says and look at those key words. From there, we're going to see how product trace actually touches several parts of the SQF code. And then we're going to talk about your programs. So how do you build those programs? And then what's the auditor going to do when they come to audit your program? And then I'll finish up with some nonconformances, what we're seeing here at SQFI for Edition 9 for Product Trace. Product Trace is not new, not even close to being new for Edition 9, and not even really any changes for Product Trace. So it's old, you know, requirements, but we're going to really take a deep dive into it today. And hopefully by sharing some of these non-conformances, maybe there's something that you'll see at your site that maybe you need to improve upon before your SQF auditor gets there. And then I'm going to talk about a few resources. SQF has lots of resources. I want you all to check those out. I'll go over those. And then we'll finish up with questions. So get those questions in because we will take lots of questions at the very end. So let's just jump right in. Oh, I got to get used to this, using this mouse here. Okay, so product trace 2.6.2, those are the requirements. And for people that are current practitioners or auditors, you should be familiar with that. As I said, it didn't really change for Edition 9, so you should be familiar with that wording. If you're new to SQF, maybe this is the first time you've seen it. So either way, I always find that when you break the code down, people just learn something new. So we're really going to dive into that. But you will see here there's only one element under 2.6.2. That's 2.6.2.1 for product trace. And got a few bullet points in there. There's a lot packed into that first, that one and only element there. So again, we're going to break it down and we are going to look at the key words. I always tell people, I keep a copy of the code by my computer at all times, as does every member of the technical team. So we always have it there. And I have lots of comments, notes. I have color-coded highlighters that I use. So everywhere in my hard copy of the code, anywhere it says documented and implemented, I have that highlighted in bright yellow. Because what does it mean to say that you have something documented? We'll start there. So documented means you have some type of a procedure. It's written down exactly what you're going to do, and in this case, the responsibility and methods to trace product. So it has to be documented. So you have to have that procedure or that program that tells who's doing what, when they're doing it, how they're doing it, okay? So it starts with the procedure, and then it has to be implemented. And there are lots of different pieces to implementation, okay? So, we don't specifically mention training here, but I'm gonna talk to you about training a little bit later on. But anytime you have a document or a procedure, something that tells people who's doing it, how they're doing it, when they're doing it, you need to train people on that. So there are many different ways to train. So you may have a training program that, you know, everybody gets trained on a regular basis. You know, maybe it's part of new hire training and then annually they get trained, or it could be training as a part of their on-the-job training. So it's something that they would learn when they're getting qualified for a specific job. So there's different ways to do that. And You know, SQFI, I think we do a great job of writing the code such that it's flexible and can be applied to any site. And so I get lots of very specific questions through the compliance mailbox where people are asking me, for example, just today, I had one that said, you know, where do I need to store uniforms? What does the code say? And I get to respond to all those and say, the code says they shall be stored to prevent contamination to the product. So it's really up to you as a site to determine how you're going to implement that. And that's one of the great things about the SQF code, I think, is that it does allow the site some flexibility. To be able to implement the code to fit their requirements and needs. But back to product trace. Okay, so finished product, you have to be able to trace it one step forward. That means when it leaves your building, you're shipping it out. So it's going one step forward. So that could be to the customer or to the consumer, or it could be to a distribution center. So it's one step forward. You have to be able to determine where that finished product went. So one step forward, at least one step back from the process to the supplier. So if you're under the manufacturing code and you are receiving product in or ingredients in, materials in to create a product, then you have to be able to trace one step back to your supplier. Okay, so one step forward, one step back is required. The code also requires you to document receipt dates. So when did you get raw materials and ingredients in? When did the food contact packaging and materials arrive? And then other inputs, okay? And if you think about other inputs, what else is impacting the process? Maybe it's processing aids. It could be food grade lubricants or greases that are used in the process. Okay, so again, you as a site need to determine what all those inputs are. Okay, and you should be able to have those receipt dates documented. This also has a reference to 281. We're going to get to that later. Traceability is maintained where product is reworked. And the rework element is 2.4.6. So we need to define what rework means for your specific site. So it may be taking product and reintroducing it into the process, prior processes. It could be recouping. So maybe I'm taking product that's already been put into a carton and I'm going to take it out and I'm going to put it into another carton. Okay, so I need to be able to maintain traceability. So be thinking about where in your process that rework exists. And I will tell you, 2461, that rework element is one of the most commonly marked not applicable elements. And at times, I really question whether it truly is not applicable or if the site has really considered all of the places where they rework material. Okay. And it, again, it could be recoup. Maybe you're recouping product and just relabeling it or repackaging it as something else. And that's okay if you're doing like and to like and things like that. But you need to be able to maintain that traceability because, again, you got to go one step back. You got to go one step forward. Okay. Effectiveness. So, gosh, that word shows up a lot in the SQF code. You have to make sure that things are effective. So it's not just enough to document and implement. So that's the first pieces, document, implement. But is it effective? Okay. And so one of the ways that you determine if it's effectiveness is to review it. And the SQF code says your product trace shall be reviewed at least annually. It could be more often. And typically it would be part of that product recall and withdrawal review. So you could do product traces outside of a full recall test, but Typically, sites always do their annual review of their product trace as a part of the product recall and withdrawal system, and that's okay. Again, it references it here, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And then the last piece of it I want to talk about is the records of raw and packaging material receipt and use. So raw material, the ingredients, and packaging material receipt and use. So you have to have records. Okay, we've already said receipt dates have to be recorded. So you have to have records. And then the finished product dispatch and destination. So where did it go and how many what quantity went to each location? And so when did it go? So you have to have all of those records and they have to be accessible. Okay, now I mentioned the three references there under product trace. So 2818 talks about that full trace back of all ingredients and processing aids in allergen containing materials. So if you're familiar with the SQF code, 2.8.1 is allergen management. And so we just reference product trace or allergen management in product trace because we just want to show that interrelationship there. So you need to be understanding how those allergens and ensuring that that cross-contamination doesn't occur in those allergen ingredients. And, I'm just going to leave it for when we get to those non-conformances, but I want to highlight some of the ways that we forget to look at that allergen-containing foods. So we'll talk about that. And then, of course, rework must be traced. There's not an option for anything different. It has to be traced. And that reference there is specifically 2461. Again, remember I said it's often marked as not applicable, but it doesn't, I'm just not sure if it should be marked not applicable as much as it is. So just really do a good look at your process and, you know, look at that flowchart in your food safety plan. Is there opportunities where there is product that is going back into the process that maybe you haven't accounted as a part of rework? So make sure you take a look at that. And then 2632, the recall system, again, that's your recall and withdrawal element, has to be tested and reviewed annually. Verified is another good word that we use there. And then the requirements on what to test. Products from different shifts and materials used across a range of products shipped to a variety of customers. And it has to include bulk materials. And I'm just going to tell you guys, I came from, you know, industry as an SQF practitioner, and how many times do we select the easiest product we can when we're tracing, doing our annual review? You know, not that anybody on here does that, but I'm just saying that sometimes we take the easy road, and I would challenge you not to take the easy road. I mean, I came from baked goods. And let me tell you how easy it is not to pick flour as the ingredient to do the trace on, because there's a lot of moving pieces to that. So I challenge you to fully test your system and choose those ingredients that will do that and not just the easy way out. Okay, so pick different things. Each time you do a trace, you should be picking different things. I told you I answer a lot of questions in compliance, and I had a question this week about, does this mean that I just need to do my recall test or my trace test at a different time of the day? And I said, no, the code is not telling you what time of the day to do your trace. You can do it, you know, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but it's telling you, you need to look at products that were produced on different shifts, used in a variety of products, shipped to a variety of customers. So we're not saying when to actually do the trace, but we're saying what that trace needs to cover. Okay. So take a look at those references, see how those interrelate, because really the code is just a big book of interrelationships. That's what it is. And so everything impacts everything else. So you've got your food safety plan, and then within that, there are so many pieces that just come together to make your food safety system. So make sure you understand how those things relate. All right, so points to consider. So let's say maybe you are new to SQF, and so where do I get started? And so I wanna point you to this graphic here. You need to look at the requirements in the code. So, hey, you've already taken the first step. You're on the webinar today. You're hearing about 2621, and you know what the requirements are. We talked about it. You have to have that documented procedure. You have to consider finished product as well as ingredients. You have to look at packaging. You have to include processing aids and other inputs into the process. You have to think about rework, and you have to make sure you're reviewing and doing that annual test, and then all those records that go with that. So we know what the SQF code says. Now, what does regulatory say? You know, and that's going to be different depending on, you know, what site, food code regulations that your particular product and your facility has to be aligned with. So we've already mentioned there's a new traceability rule that's coming out. I believe it is supposed to be released November 7th. Chris, you may confirm that. That's the last word I got. November 7th, we're going to see that traceability rule in its final form. So it's been coming, but now I think it's going to be realized November 7th. And I remember November 7th because that's the first day of our SQF conference in Orlando, Florida. So if you haven't checked it out, and we still have space for people to come and join, the SQF conference in Orlando, we can talk about the regulatory, the new rule, because it's going to come out that very first day. And I'd be glad to have a conversation about what that final rule looks like while we're there in Orlando in person. But yeah, regulatory, you got to make sure that you know what requirements that you have to adhere to. And then customer. There may be some customer requirements that you have to adhere to. For example, some customers where the SQF code says you shall do a minimum of one trace annually, and that's tracing forward and tracing backwards. So a minimum of one that your system has to be tested annually. I do know there are customers that require a minimum of two annual test to your trace and your recall system. So making sure you know what those customer requirements are. And some of you may only have one customer and it may be easy. Some of you, however, may have multiple customers and you need to understand what each one of their requirements are with regards to all of your food safety system, but in particular your trace system, which impacts your recall system as well. So making sure you know what those customer requirements are. And then the last one I have there are company requirements. Some of you may work for small, you know, one owner, single owner sites, and so there may not be an overarching corporate office that has requirements in place that you have to make sure that you're following. So, but a lot of you do have that corporate office that may have those policies that they put out, and they may have some additional requirements that you have to do above and beyond the SQF code, above and beyond regulatory, and above and beyond your customers. So making sure you're familiar with each of those pieces, because they're all going to come together to create your site trace program, okay? So then the auditor is gonna come in and he's gonna say, let me look at your trace program or your procedure. And then he's gonna go back and look at each of those things. You know, does your program meet the code? Does your program meet regulatory? Does your program meet your customer requirements? And he may ask you to prove what your customer requirements are. So make sure you have those handy and available. And you know, a lot of our customers, they'll put out supplier manuals, or maybe it's, you know, on a website somewhere where you can log into a portal and you can download those customer requirements. Just know where that those documents are at so that you can easily access them during the audit, okay? And then your company requirements. So your auditor, he or she, we have a lot of female auditors, he or she, they're gonna look at each piece of that and see how that makes up your program. And then once they've determined that your program meets the requirements of all these four groups here, then they're gonna look at the implementation piece of it. So remember back to those keywords, documented and implemented. Okay, so they're gonna look at the documentation piece of it, your procedure. They're gonna look at the implementation piece of it. And so they're gonna look at your records. They're gonna interview your employees, and they might even observe part of the TRACE program being in process. So as an auditor, I might go out on this on the floor, and I might talk to the person who's dumping all the ingredients together, and I might ask them some questions about, you know, where do you get the lot code off of the individual ingredients? Where are you recording it? How are you determining quantities? You know, there are lots of different ways. You know, some things are easy and they're eaches. I used one, and then some of them are not so easy, and it's down to pounds or ounces or, you know, some other measurement that, you know, can be variable. And then, you know, once they get into that, then they branch off into other things. So if I'm measuring something that I'm measuring in pounds, then maybe they want to see the calibration records for your scales to determine that it's accurately measuring the poundage of the ingredient. So lots of interrelationships that just spread out as you're following those audit trails. So be prepared for that. And a good auditor will do that. They will follow those audit trails. So here at SQFI, we talk about the road to Rio. So I just mentioned it. You may have missed it, but Rio stands for records, interviews, and observations. And so we want to make sure we have those records because the auditor is going to look at those. We want to make sure our personnel are trained. And you'll see my third bullet point there. Train everyone, including backups, okay? Because you don't want to get in a situation where, you know, a key person is absent on the day that an auditor is there or the FDA is there. Or, you know, heaven forbid that, you know, a recall occurs and you've got a key person missing. So make sure those backups are trained in the TRACE system so that everything can go as it's designed, okay? And then, so records, interviews, and observations. So auditors will just stand and observe and watch employees as they're measuring out ingredients. They'll watch employees as they're recording the lot codes. They're going to observe that process, how things, how materials move, how they get to the production area, how they get returned to the storage area. Same thing in finished goods. They're going to be looking at production records, and they're going to be observing those employees that are putting a lot code on the product, and then how it's moving from production to the warehouse. So don't forget both ends of the process as well as the middle. So how are we ensuring that lot traceability is maintained throughout the entire process, which is a part, should be a part of our program. So again, just to hit these bullet points here, know the requirements applicable to your site. So again, number one there, read the code, read the SQF code, read the regulatory, read your customer requirements, and then any corporate or company procedures. Read them all. Make sure you understand what is required. The next bullet point, I cannot say this enough. Ensure it is easily understood and can be managed. I can't tell you how many sites I see that get non-conformances because they went above and beyond all of the requirements. So they wanted to put a fancy process in place. And what they ended up doing was making it too difficult for people to manage it. Okay, so keep it simple. All right, keep it simple. The process should meet requirements, but be easy enough for everybody to understand and follow. And then it's easily managed from a management and leadership perspective. So keep it simple. Train, we've talked about that. Make sure everybody's trained. And then those records, making sure they're accessible and in a timely manner. I've heard a couple times this week already of sites that were challenged because they were not able to pull records in a timely manner. And, I just hate to see sites that have those things in place and then they get a non-conformance in records because they're not organized enough to find everything rather quickly. So just again, when it comes to records, whether you're using hard copy records or electronic, and again, the code does not require one or the other. You can use one or the other, certainly. You can use a combination of both, but they have to be accessible. I didn't put legible on here, but that's just kind of a given. So if you are using hard copies of records, making sure that they're legible as well. And I can't stress enough, people have terrible handwriting. I have terrible handwriting when I'm in a hurry. And as often our production people are. So just making sure that it's legible. Okay, so that's kind of some things just to consider for your TRACE program, whether you're starting out new or whether you've been SQF certified for a while and maybe you think, I'm not sure that we included all of our customer requirements, so we need to go back and take a look. So all those things come together to make that TRACE program. Again, I don't know if we've got any questions coming in, but if you haven't, please chat those questions in. As the presenter, I can't see the questions, so Amy has those and she's collecting those, but hopefully there's lots of questions coming in so we can answer those at the end. Okay, now non-conformances. Like I said, I will look at several hundred audit reports in a month's time, and I look at section summaries, I look at non-conformances. I also look at corrective and preventive actions as well and root cause analysis. And I know one of the last webinars we did with Ferry Johnson last year, because I think I was the speaker on it, was on root cause analysis. So I'm sure that one's probably still floating around here, still available. If you haven't seen that, so that was a good one because that's an area where we see challenges from our certified sites is getting that root cause and that proper corrective and preventive action. And the reason why I say that is because we're going to talk about repeat findings here in a second. So I pulled Edition 9 data because, Edition 8.1, kind of old news. We're now, almost, we're getting close to a year and a half into Edition 9. So all of our sites have had at least one Edition 9 audit, and several of them have already had their second Edition 9 audit. So these are just non-conformances from Edition 9. I will tell you, product traits typically does not make the top 10 in minors or majors. So, I had to, pull these. As you can see there, we did have one critical non-conformance to Edition 9 to product trace, 2621. And here was the reason. The site had stopped all traceability during the pandemic, and they just stopped doing traceability altogether. And the auditor had kind of pulled it together because there were some also some things related to food safety culture that they tied into that. And that is why it was elevated to a critical. So it wasn't just the fact they stopped traceability, but it was the culture in the plant, which allowed the site to stop traceability. That combination made it a critical nonconformance. And as you know, criticals are minus 50 points, and they are a guaranteed failure. Because that already puts you down to a 50 out of a 100, and that anything below a 70 is failed. So one critical, and your site has failed the audit. If you're an initial site, you just have to start over in your certification process. So it would just mean a new certification audit when you're ready, okay? And so you would work with your CB, like Perry Johnson, to see when you're ready to have that certification audit again. If you're an existing site and you fail your recertification audit or your unannounced audit, it could be either of those, then you would go into suspension protocol, and there's some extra things that happen, and you get an on-site visit from an auditor within a couple months of your audit, and then you get an unannounced surveillance audit. There's just a lot of stuff that happens when you fail the audit. So let's just not go there. Let's just not do that, okay? That would make, I think, everybody's life simpler, right? So making sure that, especially food safety culture, it encompasses a lot of things. And we just wanna make sure that those things aren't happening, okay? Major nonconformances, we have had 26 to product trace for edition 9. And just some of the common, I just kind of went through and kind of put them into some buckets because there's a lot of similarities between those 26. So, for example, there were several that said they did not meet the time elements in their program. Now, what does that mean? I didn't say anything about time, did I? So the SQF code does not require you to complete your trace program within a specified period of time. So that's not a code requirement. But there could be customer requirements or regulatory requirements out there that require you, or even company requirements that require you to complete your trace exercise within a certain period of time. It could be 2 hours or 4 hours from the time that it starts. And the site had written that into their program, and they did not meet those time elements. So they had done a recall or a trace exercise, and it took several hours beyond, I think it was a 2 hour, in most cases, it was a 2 hour time window. And they didn't mean that. So again, back to keep it simple. So make sure we're meeting the requirements, but also make sure it's manageable, right? Okay. Repeat finding. I said that a minute ago. That's why I was driving in this direction. Okay. So repeat finding from the previous audit. So corrective actions were not effective. And so they got a minor in product trace the year before. And then their corrective action obviously did not resolve the issue. So they got another finding, nonconformance, and the auditor elevated it to a major because it was the exact same nonconformance. And because it was a repeat, instead of giving another minor, they made it a major. Program does not include all required elements. So that was probably the majority of them. They were missing ingredients, so they didn't have everything included in lot traceability. They maybe forgot packaging. That was several of them. Or processing aids. We had that identified. So make sure you're including everything. We've talked about it. The code says it. Make sure you're including raw materials and ingredients, your food contact packaging. Make sure you're including processing aids and other inputs. So things like food grade grease or food grade lubricants that are going on or being used on food contact surfaces or above them. So make sure you're looking at the entire program, okay? So minors, there were 449 so far to edition 9. A big one, records not complete. So they pulled records and there were blanks in some cases, or there was a missing record that couldn't be found. Also, several of them were because the annual test was not conducted, or the test was conducted but did not trace both forward and backward. Okay, so making sure you do that. Internal lot numbers not traceable to manufacturer's lot code. Some of you may be thinking, what is that? Well, I happen to have worked for a facility where our system that we used, every time we received an ingredient, it would print a label out for our internal tracking, and it would assign it a lot code. So if I got in a pallet of cinnamon, then it would assign a lot code to that pallet, okay? So I could trace it within my system. But you have to have a connection to that manufacturer's lot code so that, let's say you receive a manufacturer's lot code of cinnamon on two different dates and you have a recall that involves the cinnamon. So you have to be able to identify those internal lot numbers and trace it back to the manufacturer's lot code, because again, you have to go backward one step, which would be to the manufacturer. And then the discrepancy between the amount traced versus received. So within your system, you should identify what's a successful trace and what's not. Again, the SQF code does not say, oh, you shall have 99% recovery or 95% recovery on your ingredients or your finished product. We don't state that in the code. You need to identify what makes it an acceptable trace and at what point you would do corrective action. So let's say I did a trace and I only recovered 80%. Is that good or bad? And what are you going to do if that 80% is bad? 80% sounds a little low to me. So if you tell me 80% is good, I'm probably, as the auditor, going to come back and say, really? Let's talk about that. So why do you think 80% is good? So, but there were a lot of cases where there was a discrepancy and no corrective action was taken. Or in some cases, we traced more than what we received. So if we say we received 500 pounds of something and we did our trace and we recovered 750 pounds, there's a problem there. Okay, so having 150% recovery is just as bad as having 50% recovery. Okay, it means that our trace system is not effective. Okay, so again, that keyword effectiveness, so making sure that we determine what effective means. Okay. And then receipt dates not recorded. Again, in the code, we said you need to record receipt dates for all these things. So in some cases, people did not necessarily read the code, okay? Because it clearly says receipt dates need to be recorded, okay? And then I want to just share with you some resources. So we have some great Edition 9 guidance documents. So there's one on product withdrawal and recall. There's one on product identification. They both talk about product traceability and lot traceability. So make sure you check those out. They're available on our website, which I have listed, SQFI's website. Great resource. There is a resource center. So it's sqfi.com. And there's a resource center, upper right corner. Just click on that and you get to all of our resources. And then you will also find the tip sheets there. Tip sheets were specifically written for the fundamentals code. But you know what? Those tip sheets have some great information in them. So check them out. There is one on product ID, trace, and withdraw and recall. And then just one more comment about those guidance documents, which I happen to think are fabulous. They include the road to Rio in them. So when you look on the last page of each of those guidance documents, there is a road to Rio, records, interviews, and observations. So it will tell you as a site what you need to consider as far as having in place. And then it will also give you an indication as to what the auditor will look for in records, interviews, and observations when they are on site. Also, just as a side note, great to use during your internal audits as well. Because you should be acting as an official SQF auditor during your internal audits, okay? And then the last resource I've got mentioned here is our YouTube channel. If you have not checked us out on YouTube, you are missing out. There are so many webinars, presentations, past SQF conference education sessions are posted there. So lots of great resources if you're having problems with understanding a specific requirement. So check out those things and you'll find hopefully something you're looking for. And then our key takeaways from today, and then we are going to get to our questions. Hopefully there's lots of questions. But first of all, review your program. So if you have written your program, review it. If you haven't written your program, then absolutely use the information that you've learned today to write that program and cover all your bases. Complete the annual test. You know, that's a common nonconformance on a lot of our elements. People don't, you know, complete that annual test, and you really need to do that to determine the effectiveness of your programs and keep up to date on changes. I put that one there last because, as I've said, FDA has a traceability rule coming out. It's going to happen. I believe you're going to see it November 7th. So some of you may be impacted by that. Just if you're not familiar with it, check out the FDA's website. They've got some information about the proposed rule. It's not final yet. They have taken public comments. They had a public comment period. And from what I understand, there were lots of public comments. So we're not sure exactly what the final rule is going to look like. So we're waiting with anticipation, as many of you all are, for November 7th. But there is a list of foods that will fall under that traceability rule. So if you're sitting there thinking, I'm not sure whether it's going to apply to me, check it out. Look at the list of foods that are a part of that traceability rule, and you'll be able to tell whether you're a part of that or not. So that brings me up to our question slide. I'm going to hand that over to Amy or Chris, whoever's going to read any questions that we have, or maybe we don't have questions. I don't know. It's a surprise to me.
It's a mystery, but no, it looks like we do have some questions that have come in. But I am going to go ahead and encourage anybody who hasn't sent their questions in, please do that right now. We're willing to take any questions on SQF, questions about PGFSI, about food safety certification. We'd love to get you some answers today. But let's see, we have the first question here. This is from Christina. Christina asks, when we review or do a traceability exercise, do we do both step forward and step back in it, or do we do two separate exercises to cover both?
That is a great question, Christina. So, you know, it's really up to you, but the code says you have to trace both forward and backwards. You could do that as two separate exercises. Absolutely. That would not be an issue whatsoever. I always liked doing it as one exercise. So I would pick a product and then I would trace it forward to see, you know, where it all shipped to, or if we still had some in inventory. So I would trace it forward. And then I would also take that finished product and I would break it down and trace, get my lot codes for all of my ingredients. And then I would do a trace back on one of those ingredients. So you can certainly do it either way, but that's a great question.
Yeah, absolutely. We did have a question come through about the slides. The slides will be available for download from our website. And as I mentioned at the beginning, we are recording this session, so that will be on our YouTube channel. I know Tammy mentioned the SQF YouTube channel, which is extremely helpful as well. All right, we've got a question here from Anthony. Anthony's wondering, would you recommend a software application as a best practice for traceability exercises? Any input there?
Yes. So, Anthony, that too is a great question. So, you know, I've been fortunate to work at a very small facility, you know, 50 employees. We did food packaging, so it was very simple. We got in one ingredient, which was plastic, and we thermoformed it. So it was very simple, and we had paper traceability, you know, that That was just, that's just what we used, was paper. And it worked just fine. We could keep up with it, but we were small and we had one type of product. You know, our inputs were very limited. But I, as I said before, I worked for a bakery and we had hundreds of incoming ingredients. We had at one time like 1,300 different part numbers or SKUs going out the door. So just from that perspective, doing it all manually would have been extremely difficult. So we were very fortunate to have software that that was able to use, to do traceability on. And I can't imagine something that large with that many moving parts to it. I just can't imagine doing it manually, but I'm certain there are probably sites out there that do it. But it's really just up to the site and, you know, again, looking at your process to determine the return on investment. And for us, definitely having a software to do traceability was worth every penny of it. But it would be up to each site to determine.
All right, great. We've got a question here as well from Marianne. She's wondering how traceability in relation to SQF can be integrated, if possible, with supply chain management practices.
Okay, so I mean, well, first of all, your approved supplier program, you know, you set the requirements and within the code, it talks about your suppliers need to be, you know, compliant with a food safety system, you know, like SQF. Depending on what risk level they're at. So for each part of your supply chain, you would have a risk level determined. But, you know, the expectation is they have to have a process in place for traceability because, you know, those sites are going to be also regulated by government. They're going to have regulatory requirements. And so throughout the entire supply chain, everybody has to play their own part in it. Because if any one piece fails, then the whole system fails. So if the manufacturer doesn't have a good, you know, traceability program, then it's going to stop there from the retailer. And so when this new FDA proposed rule comes out, the supply chain is going to be critical. And so every step in the process should be able to trace backward one and forward one. So honestly, you have to have that integrated as a part of your supply chain so that everybody's adhering to those standards so that you, in turn, as an SQF site, can adhere to those standards. And I hope that answered your question.
Absolutely. We've got another question here from David. David is wondering if the new traceability rules apply to frozen fruit.
Oh, David, if you could just take a look, go on the FDA website and type in FDA traceability rule, and you'll be able to get to a page that's FDA proposed traceability rule. And then there's a link to the current list of products that have to be covered under the traceability rule. And so there's some, you know, nuances to it. So if there's certain kill steps, then then it's not included. So, you know, it would really depend on, you know, the product and things. So I would check out that list to see exactly where fruit and what stage they're at and where they're covered under the traceability rule if they are.
All right, awesome. All right, we've got a question here from Aaron. Aaron says, we have been having issues with being able to perform internal audits on suppliers because of COVID restrictions. What are your thoughts on virtual audits of our suppliers? Do you think this would cause us issues with the new rules in November?
Okay, so how about if I, because I don't want to speak, I want to speak for the FDA, but I'll give my perspective on virtual audits. So, you know, during the pandemic, we were forced to do a lot of things that we hadn't done before. And so virtual audits was a part of that. And, you know, I had the opportunity to sit in on a couple of virtual audits to get a feel for whether they were whether they could work or not. And so what I will say about virtual audits is that, you know, there are some things that you absolutely can do virtually to be able to reduce the amount of time that you're on site. And that's the way we've written our code for Edition 9. We included virtual audits in Edition 9, but it's what we call a hybrid audit. So we still don't allow fully remote audits, except in extenuating circumstances, and even those are not GFSI recognized. But we do allow blended or hybrid or, you know, partial virtual or remote audits under Edition 9, up to 50% of the audit. But we're very clear with our auditors and our CBs, you know, what the limitations are of doing a virtual audit. And so, you know, for me, there is nothing like being on site and being able to touch, smell, hear, see, you know, all the things that you just can't do when you're virtual. So it's really up to each site to determine how their requirements, you know, are in line with those, you know, four pieces. But I can speak to the SQF piece of it. And, you know, we're not opposed to there being some virtual audits. But you would need to write that into your program and how you're going to do that. But I'm just a big fan of being on site, but with the understanding there are certainly some things you could look at. I would have no problem whatsoever looking at some procedures virtually. I would have no issue with, you know, even looking at a few records like, you know, the site, if they're required to perform an internal audit, there would be no issue with me looking at an internal audit or a management review, meeting minutes, things like that. But again, I just think being on site and seeing everything, I mean, it's just hard to beat from a food safety perspective. I did, you know, look at one virtually. I was on an audit. The audit was taking place in Europe. And of course, I was in the US. And the auditor was also in the U.S. In a different state. And I mean, you're just really at the mercy of the person who's operating the camera. So if you're trying to take an inspection of the facility, you are just at the mercy of the person, you know, operating the camera to show you different things. And I'm just not sure you can get to the level of detail that you get to when you're on site with a flashlight in one hand, you know, and looking under and through and at specific things. But absolutely, you know, remote audits have.
Yeah, and Tammy, I'm sorry, Tammy, I just wanted to jump in kind of on the certification. Yeah, from the certification body side, you know, kind of how we look at it. Obviously, a virtual audit is better than no audit. Now, obviously, in your supplier approval process, there are lots of different regulations that you still have to adhere to, whether it's, you know, FSMA or, you know, all sorts of things. So still do your due diligence, you know, as if you're going to go out and audit them. For some reason, if there is an issue, instead of, you know, maybe once every year, you can definitely do something like Tammy mentioned, you know, with kind of that hybrid model where it's almost like a large portion, you know, offsite and then come on site for the final inspection. And, you know, Tammy, you're right. I think that there's just such an element of, you know, kind of our senses that we really have to turn off when we're doing it virtually. I know personally being in some sites before that, you know, there are certain things that you can pick up on like smells, you know, that can help identify pest problems and things like that. So, you know, while a virtual audit is really important, if there are COVID restrictions, you can't get on site. I just don't ever see a world that it's going to replace, you know, somebody being on site and actually physically going through the inspection.
Absolutely, Chris. I agree totally with that.
Yeah, we got to get a hold of Mark Zuckerberg and see when we're going to get the Meta-powered VR audits, you know, so we can be at, like, with smell-o-vision.
It's
everything.
Like you're there.
It's like you're really there. All right. I didn't see any more questions come in, but if anybody has any questions, if you think of any, you know, after we wrap up, if you review the slides and think of something, please absolutely feel free to email PGFSI, and we are happy to get your questions off to either Tammy or someone else on our staff who could answer for you. And that's pgrfsi@pgrfsi.com. You can also visit our website. There's a phone number there if you want to talk to someone in person. And yeah, no, Tammy, any parting words of wisdom? We really do appreciate having you on again. It's always a great time.
Oh yeah, no, again, read the code, know those requirements, you know, and keep it simple. You know, don't try to overdo it, okay? So keep it manageable.
All right, absolutely. Thank you all of our attendees for joining us. We hope to see you on a future webinar. I hope everyone has a great rest of their week, and we'll see you all next time.
Great. Thank you, Amy and Tammy. Thank you so much for your time today. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely.